It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. On the program today, where the jobs are, small businesses is where, by the way. We'll do a little bit of geopolitics, and we'll have another adventure in housing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, 5 May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The business and economic news of this Wednesday comes in bite-sized chunks, you might say. A little bit here, a little bit there. Starting with this from Katherine Tai, the U.S. Trade Representative. I'm just going to read her statement to you. The administration, that would be the Biden administration, of course, believes strongly in intellectual property protections, Ambassador Tai said, but in service of ending this pandemic, it supports the waiver of those protections for COVID-19 vaccines. That's all about the patents that Pfizer and Moderna and the rest of them hold on their vaccines in the name of getting more shots in more arms globally. The United States had been against a proposal at the World Trade Organization to do what the White House now says it wants to do. A whole lot of negotiation yet to come on lifting those patent protections, of course. Investors didn't really take much note. Pfizer shares flat on the day. Facebook investors, a little bit put off by the news of their company that CEO Mark Zuckerberg is going to have to be a little bit more specific. Thank you very much, says the company's quasi-independent oversight board, if it wants to keep that ban on former President Trump in place. You've heard that news, of course. Ticker symbol FB today, down about 1% or so. Final little news chunk before we really get going with things. The private payroll processor ADP said this morning the economy added 742,000 jobs last month. The official government report comes out on Friday morning. The whisper number on that one? 1 million new jobs. Maybe more. That'd be big. Very big. A lot of those jobs, most new jobs in this economy actually come from small businesses. And there is a report out today from the New York Fed looking at small businesses in the service sector and how likely they were to have been able to make it through the pandemic. As Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports, timing was everything.
Businesses that closed early in the pandemic have a problem now. New York Fed economist Davide Melcangi says their customers forgot about them.
The longer than this establishment remains closed, the more it loses touch with respect to their customers.
Firms that didn't have to close right away might have been healthier to begin with and didn't lose touch. Jessica Wartenweiler is co-owner of the Tinsmith, a wedding venue in Madison, Wisconsin. It never officially closed, even though most of its weddings were canceled.
I was definitely still working every day, you know, corresponding with the booked couples that we had in terms of what's going on with restrictions. Can we have our wedding?
Wartenweiler says she and her partner were able to sell some property to limp through last year, and that gave them a cash cushion. But Wartenweiler wasn't able to get a PPP loan because her business wasn't open in 2019. Businesses that closed in March of last year were also out of luck because the PPP program didn't start until April of 2020. Amanda Fisher at the Washington Center for Equitable Growth says many businesses owned by people of color fit the description of these service sector firms that closed early, no PPP loan and no cash cushion.
As we know, people of color in the United States have less accumulated wealth because of systemic discrimination over decades and decades. There's more discrimination in the banking sector, so they have fewer lines of credit to draw from.
And the New York Fed says each additional week a business is closed reduces its chances of reopening by 2 percentage points. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Not for the first time in this pandemic, the global supply apparatus is having outsized influence. We're talking minerals and metals here that will be key to a greener economy, more wind turbines and electric cars and batteries, less oil and gas. So lithium for batteries, copper, for instance, to rewire the power grid. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, a new report out suggests there is a growing mismatch between demand for those materials and their supply.
An electric vehicle requires 6 times the critical minerals of a gas car. The world's need for lithium for batteries may surge by 75-fold. That is the green future, according to today's report from the International Energy Agency. Executive Director Fatih Birol said in a webinar today that governments and investors need to pony up to extract those materials. Otherwise,
prices of those critical minerals will increase sharply, and the clean energy transitions may well be costlier and therefore slower.
And he suggested stockpiling key elements.
Some countries would build voluntary strategic stocks for some of the critical minerals.
It would be a huge lift to bring enough copper, nickel, and rare earth elements out of the ground for a green transition, says Michael Clare. He's emeritus in security studies at Hampshire College.
A lot of the mines are located in places that's difficult to get access to. They're in countries like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which has all kinds of political problems and environmental problems.
And it's not just a mining issue. Critical minerals need to be processed and purified, a sector where China leads and America lags. But the White House infrastructure plan would put billions into this space. Amy Myers Jaffe teaches climate issues at Tufts. Her new book is Energy's Digital Future.
Just as the U.S. government gave a loan to Tesla to open their first factory, we should be thinking about who are the players out there that the U.S. government could support in lithium processing, in rare earth processing.
These are the essential businesses of the future, she says. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, a little bit up, a little bit down, not much enthusiasm in either direction, really. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. So I mentioned the ADP news on new jobs and the April unemployment report coming out on Friday. There is also, labor market indicator-wise, online job sites that can offer a whole lot of insight as well. The number of jobs posted on Indeed.com, which I should mention here is a marketplace underwriter, the number of jobs posted there is 22% higher now than it was in February of last year. I talked to Chris Himes, the CEO of Indeed, about all this the other day.
Yeah, so I think there's really not one story that explains the entire labor market. There are sectors where there are a lot of employers who are trying to hire in those areas that they've been trying really hard for the last 14 months in warehousing, in delivery, in healthcare. In some of these other areas, people who work in food service, for example, there are so many fewer jobs than there were a year ago. The employers have a little bit more of the power there.
Let me ask you now, as an employer and a guy running a company who's spent a lot of time, I'm sure, thinking about the virtualness of our environment right now. How are you running your company? I read somewhere that you estimate 70% of your roles are going to stay virtual as we come out of this pandemic.
Yeah, so we were a little bit early on this. March 3rd of 2020, we made the call to send all 10,000 employees home. And what we found over the last year, actually, is that we've been incredibly effective as a business. And I think it's a lot like what we're seeing from a hiring perspective. So one of the big things that we have done over the last year with our business is built out a platform for virtual hiring. And it turned out that video interviewing, which is something we've believed in for a long time but thought was a lot farther into the future, we were able to bring that directly into our platform. And like with remote work, we think a lot of these people who are trying something like this for the first time are going to stick with it as the world opens back up again.
Notwithstanding the cost savings, obviously, of a lot of our virtual lives, and you don't have to travel and you don't have to worry about what you're wearing and all of that, do you not worry about the loss of serendipitous interaction and happenstance in moving your business forward?
Yeah, so my belief is that we're going to be able to better serve more people by having a range of options in office, working from home, and this hybrid environment, and that we'll end up having more than one type of business culture and set of interactions that can open up because of that.
What are you going to do? I mean, you're the head guy. You're going to go in, you're going to stay home. What are you going to do?
You know, I have been really productive for the last 14 months. I think our second night of working from home, we had an all-hands Zoom with all 10,000 employees where I just did an open Q&A. We have done that now every week since then. I actually feel more connected to the business as a whole sitting here in my home office than I did when I was trying to meet with people and connect with them office by office.
How have those questions on those all staff meetings changed from March the 4th of 2020 to today?
Well, I will say this, the first question that got the most votes, that was the first question we answered on that first night, was the catering staff that cooks for us in our office. They're not Indeed employees. They work for another business. How are we going to take care of them and how are they going to do during this time? People are now asking questions about when can I get back to an office? Do I need to be vaccinated and things like that? But they still care deeply about the people that we're trying to help as a business. And that's one thing that hasn't changed.
Chris Himes, he's the CEO at Indeed. Mr. Himes, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Kai, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so let's talk grand strategy here for a minute, shall we? Great power competition with an economic bent. The European Union is proposing new rules that would let it block deals with foreign companies if those companies get unfair subsidies from their governments. You don't have to read too terribly closely between the lines to see the EU is talking about China here, as the global search for leverage over the world's second biggest economy seems to be waning a bit. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has that one.
European leaders are increasingly worried that China's state-heavy economic system is threatening their own companies. James Lewis is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says China and Europe have a history here.
About a decade ago, the Chinese, through a combination of industrial espionage and economies of scale from their local market and huge government subsidies, basically ate the solar panel market and drove the Europeans out of the business.
Europe's new rules are trying to level the economic playing field. Concern over human rights is another factor. Other governments are also concerned. President Biden is reportedly circulating proposals targeting China at the G7 summit. David Dollar is with the Brookings Institution.
You know, we and the Europeans, we can control who invests in our economy, who's able to do mergers and acquisitions in our economy. But there are lots of other areas where we just do not have any leverage.
Anything that China does within its territory, from subsidies to human rights, is probably out of reach, he says. Jennifer Hillman, with the Council on Foreign Relations, says China's growing influence as an investor in infrastructure through its International Belt and Road Initiative has made it harder for some countries to confront it. And Hillman says the U.S. is partly to blame.
It's very hard when we are going around the world telling everyone, don't use Huawei's 5G, when we do not have a 5G alternative to offer. We're concerned about the degree to which China is building all of this high-speed rail around the world, but we do not have a high-speed rail alternative to offer.
Governments have called for a level playing field with China, but for now it is a moving playing field. And the U.S. and its allies are just trying to find their footing. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
Three words, people. Marketplace Morning Report. That's the call out. Check it out. Coming up.
It was an opportunity of a lifetime.
I'm in, right? But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 97 today, 0.2%, closed at a record high, 34,230. The NASDAQ went the other way, down 51 points, about 0.3%, 13,582. The S&P 500 basically flat, 4,167. Scott Tong was talking about special metals earlier, checking stocks of companies that deal with lithium. FMC closed up 2.3%. Albemarle Corporation jumped 3% today. Bond prices, why they rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note dropped to 1.57%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Promising as the economic outlook is in this country, it is quite the opposite over in Germany. GDP over there shrank more than 1.5% in the first quarter, and there are predictions for a tsunami of bankruptcies. That's a quote across the Eurozone when virus relief programs come to an end. And in Germany, there are fears for the country's mid-sized businesses, Mittelstands, they're called. And they account for more than half of Germany's economic output and more than 60% of its jobs. So, from the European Desk Marketplace's Stephen Beard has been looking into three Mittelstands and how they're faring.
In a bell foundry north of Frankfurt, the 20 workers prepare to cast a new bell with a prayer. The traditional blessing for every church bell they make, but says the boss of the family-owned firm, Hans Martin Rinker, today they might also be praying for the survival of the foundry.
Now the pandemic starts to get very, very bad for us, and we will have problems.
The foundry has enough work for now, but the orders have dried up. The immediate future of the bell manufacturing looks bleak.
September maybe already, it will fall down very dramatically.
Not only because of the pandemic, church attendance in Germany has slumped in recent years. Demand for new bells is declining. But the foundry is more than 4 centuries old, and the Rinkers are not about to call it a day.
My brother and me, we are the 13th generation. We had 12 generations before us, and we do want to have some generations also after us.
They hope to carry on by diversifying in some way. They might be heartened by the example of this even older Mittelstand.
Every day, coating Prager, precision galvanizing. We galvanize dreams.
It may not win any awards for its advertising copy, but Coating does have the distinction of being Germany's oldest family firm. It started as a blacksmith's in 1502. And today?
We have about 18 plants, employ 1,100 people, and are one of the leading groups in this business.
Paul Niederstein, the current boss, says he's confident the galvanizing firm will easily ride out the pandemic because of its long-term thinking.
Obviously, as a family business, you don't think in quarters. We usually think in terms of 3 to 5 years.
It doesn't have the same shareholder pressure as a listed company, and with its longevity and deep local roots, says Niederstein, the company has no worries about its bank withdrawing support.
The relationship between the banks and the family businesses in Germany is very close, which helps in a crisis, and they don't take the umbrella right away when the first drop of rain comes.
This Mittelstand, EBM Pabst, felt the first drop of rain in April last year. Sales fell 30%. The company, which makes high-tech fans, bounced back, but now, says CEO Stefan Brandl, it's been hit by the global shortage of semiconductors.
We fight every day to get the components in time into the factory, however, it's getting tight and tight every day.
He has no doubt, however, the firm, which now employs 15,000, will survive, thanks to the owner's long-term perspective.
Any money we make, we can reinvest into the company. And that's, of course, also one of the foundations for the success of typical German family-owned businesses.
The Mittelstand model does have a downside. Critics say the corporate longevity accounts for the relatively low level of startups in Germany and the relative lack of innovation compared with the US. But the Germans seem wedded to the solidity of the system. The bells of the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church ring out across Berlin. The Rinker's foundry that made them faces an uncertain future. Hans-Martin Rinker is feeling the full weight of history.
I do not want to go one day in heaven or hell to see my ancestors there and telling them I closed it up. That will not be my business, no.
His Mittelstand, he insists, will survive. At the European Desk in London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
We've done a bunch of reporting this past year. Amy Scott's done some, Matt Levin's done some, about how the pandemic has changed where people want to live and increasingly work, where, in other words, they want to buy real estate. Some of the hottest housing markets are in rural parts of the country now. And while it is true that more people left dense cities than moved to them last year, most of those movers didn't go far. Bloomberg has crunched the numbers. 84% of people stayed within the same metro area. So for this next installment of our series, Adventures in Housing, the story of one real estate purchase that is close to the heart.
My name is Kel Harvey, and I live on Signal Mountain in Chattanooga, Tennessee. In March of 2020, I purchased my childhood home. I never thought I would be in position to purchase it because that had always been my parents' home. And then once my father passed away, everything changed. My mother knew that she was going to be leaving that home. So she was having a yard sale, having an estate sale. So the house was becoming empty and kind of standing there, the emotions of my dad. I mean, that was when it really started to hit me, was the realization of if y'all don't have a really serious conversation about you buying this, then it's going to go on the open market and it is going to sell and you're never going to see it again. My wife and I were in discussion, and I was driving in the truck at work one day, and I heard the house that built me by Miranda Lambert come on the radio.
I know they say you can't go home again.
I mean, that spoke to me, and that was just more of a realization that this was something we needed to pursue. Around the holidays of 2019 was when we really had a serious conversation about buying it, you know, what price and kind of more of those details and essentially working out a deal. Buying the house from my mother, It was interesting, to say the least. But we did it. We went about it the right way. She had representation. We had representation. And, you know, we went about it like a business transaction. And it's worked out well for her. It's worked out well for us. It still feels, and it'll probably feel strange for a long time, that knowing that I actually own it and then it's mine. And again, I never really saw myself living there, but it was an opportunity of a lifetime. We actually found documentation from the 1860s. That's how far back that property goes in my family. My kids will grow up being seventh generation to be a part of this property on Signal Mountain. I have the memories as a son, and now I'm making memories as a father with my son. If there comes a point in the future where he wants to own it or he wants to buy it, I would not at all want to put that expectation on him. I guess we'd just cross that bridge whenever we get there.
That was Kel Harvey in Signal Mountain, Tennessee. You can tell us about your adventure in housing at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, which, fair warning, might be a little bit TMI. Match Group reported earnings today, the online dating company that owns, among other platforms, Tinder and Hinge. They are banking on vaccinations and the ensuing opening up of bars and restaurants and life to be good for their business this coming quarter. Said the CEO in her letter to shareholders today, "We cannot help but be excited, looking forward to a summer of love." All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context from the Marketplace desk of, oh, for Pete's sake, are you kidding me? We're doing this again? We have talked about the debt limit, right? The fight that Congress has every couple of years over whether we're going to raise the amount we can borrow to pay the bills we have already incurred. We are set to hit that limit again on July 31st, and today the Treasury Department, which is well-skilled in moving money around while the politicians dither, today Treasury said, you know what? Because of the pandemic, we are going to be hard-pressed to buy time before we default on our debt, so please, Congress, fix this. Or in other words, yeah, we're doing this. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Robin Edgar, Drew Josdet, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Liana Squillace, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Dorado, and Becca Weinman. Remember, they're the ones coming into the studios every single day, so the rest of us don't have to, you know, accept. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.